So I was thought I would share with you an email that I got just a couple weeks ago. It was a surprise in my inbox. an individual that I've worked with for quite a few years with Johnson County sent me an email saying, I'd like to get a Bible that I could read. And the only thing I've ever seen are things that I really don't understand. And so what would you suggest? For the last 7 years, this is an individual that I have worked closely with in programs. We have facilitated programs together. For the last 7 years, this individual has even helped me when I've been asked to go to events and set up information about programs that we do in the community. Even though those events were Christian programs, she's been willing to go with me to help out, but no real interest in having any of those conversations about faith. So I was surprised when I saw this email in my inbox, and I was actually kind of geeked out and excited, and so I ended up typing up an email, probably way too much information, if I'm being honest. Way too much information to ask a pastor about version of the Bibles that would be good to read that would be understandable. Because, you know, I kind of know which ones are written for elementary age, which ones are written for high school age, college age, academic study, all of that stuff. So, of course, I'm not recommending the Greek New Testament. That's a little bit too advanced. But I ended up sending her 3 or 4 different versions and then links to where she could purchase that exact thing at Amazon. And then I also told her about Bible Gateway, where she could go out and actually select different versions, numerous versions, and read the same text in those different versions. And she could do some exploring. And she sent me back an email, "Wow, that's a lot." To which I realized I had overwhelmed the conversation. And so I just sent back a simple one that there's two versions, one that I enjoy reading when I just want to sit down and read for devotional reading, and that's the Message. I like the way Eugene Peterson words things. I think it sparks my imagination and my interest. And then I said, personally, for study, I use the New International Version. And I said, she asked about study Bibles, and I encouraged her. I said, we can look at study Bibles, but you need to understand study Bibles run the whole gamut. There's a mechanics study Bible. And then there's a social worker study Bible. There is an ultra-conservative and an ultra-liberal study Bible. I mean, there's all of the gamut of all of these things. And I said, I would suggest just read and start there. And then as you start getting questions, we can start figuring out what are some good resources to supplement your reading. So I got an email back a couple days later, and again, I thought too much information, but I didn't. Email back a couple days later. I just went out and bought the Message in large print with a little smiley face. And my simple response was this: well, enjoy reading, and when you're ready, we can grab coffee and talk. 6 years to get to that point in that conversation. 6 years. I was with a group of people the other day, and it was a group of pastors that were talking about evangelism and the work that they're doing in the community, and many of them tend to have this idea of evangelism, that it's a moment, that you share this transformational message of hope in Jesus Christ, and people immediately, their interest is piqued, and there they go, they're saying, yes, I want that relationship. I've had that happen in Tanzania, but I've had that happen, where people would just hear the gospel message and they're like, boom, that's it. But in the United States, I feel like this message has been brought so many times in so many different ways, and often it's just become background noise. I don't know that it really works that way, to just simply share the message. So I was with this group of pastors, and they were talking about things and talking about really encouraging their congregations to share the gospel and to be out and doing evangelism. And I started with this statement, I'm just not as good at evangelism as Jesus is. Jesus, when the biblical stories are written, he reaches out to someone, and within that first nanosecond, he says, you know, once they're healed, now go and sin no more, and people walk off, and boom, you know, life change. It takes me a little more time than it takes Jesus. And I'm okay with that. Even okay with 6 years. The process of us sharing the hope we have in Jesus Christ is an introduction and a relationship that we seek to build with people. I want to talk about what I call the winding road of evangelism. The winding road. There's actually a good story of this in the Gospel of John. And often we read over the story because it's spread sporadically throughout the gospel. But it's the story of a religious leader named Nicodemus. Nicodemus was a man who was curious about what Jesus was teaching. And in John chapter 3, Nicodemus comes to Jesus with two different questions. He wants to understand what Jesus is teaching. He's curious. What's interesting is the gospel writer tells us that Nicodemus came to Jesus at night. Why do you think it's important that he came at night? What do you think?
So no one would see him.
Nicodemus was ready to ask some questions, but didn't want everybody else to know that he was ready to ask some questions. It's easy to send a quick email to Jesus saying, hey, could you clarify a couple things? Nicodemus came in that way so that others wouldn't necessarily know what he was asking, because he wasn't really ready for everybody to know that he was seeking out Jesus for answers. Jesus had been teaching, and Nicodemus comes to him, and in John chapter 3 and verse 4, Nicodemus finds Jesus, and Jesus had been talking about a second birth, being born again. And Nicodemus says, well, how can someone be born again if they are already old? Can you enter a second time into your mother's womb and be born? So Nicodemus is wrestling with this concept of being born again. What does this really mean, to be born again? And Jesus talks through what he means, that this isn't a physical birth. That happens with all of us, have a physical birth. But there's this other birth, this birth of the Spirit that comes. And so Nicodemus, again curious, after hearing the answer, Nicodemus says, well, how can this be? How can you have this spiritual birth? How can things happen like this? To which Jesus went ahead and told him even more. This was the beginning of a relationship, and at least a relationship at a distance, that will span the whole Gospel of John. But what's interesting is, in Nicodemus' story, it begins with simply two people sharing ideas. Nicodemus, knowing what he believes, he is a teacher after all. He is a religious leader. He was a Pharisee. He knew the scriptures. But yet he didn't quite know them the way Jesus was teaching them. In our own lives, I believe evangelism begins with simply sharing ideas. An invitation to a conversation in which we are willing to risk hearing someone else as much as they hear us. Where we are willing to risk being asked silly questions, and instead of just scolding or chuckling under our breath, We're willing to simply engage people in what we believe. For the last 6 years, interspersed through program discussions and talk about different clients that we both serve and talk about a vast number of things, including things of faith. For the past 6 years, I've had conversations with this individual. And sometimes I even wondered, is this really going anywhere? Am I really making a difference? Just sharing ideas can seem to last for a long, long time. But it's important in building relationships. There's a power in simple conversation, a willingness to receive questions, and here's the hardest part for me sometimes, because you heard the way I answered the email. I'm ready to give all the answers. And then to let's go, let's do something. Let's make a decision now and move somewhere. But rather than assuming that every conversation has to be ended with punctuation, that we simply allow the conversation to end and pick it up another day. And that conversation runs at the speed of another one's intellect, not at mine. Most of us, because I know the way we are, would be driven nuts by seeing a bunch of sentences run on without punctuation. We want to know, where does that sentence end? Where does the next one begin? What was the meaning of that sentence? There's an exclamation point. I understand what it means. There's a question mark. Oh, that was a question. We want those things because they're clear to us. And sometimes we want the same thing at the end of conversations with people. So what decision will you make moving forward? But often what people are looking for in learning what our faith means to us is simply no ending to that moment and no need for us to end it with a specific way, but to invite more dialogue to fill the silence. We meet Nicodemus again in John chapter 7. So some time has passed since Nicodemus and Jesus have talked. And in fact, probably several years. The question that we don't have the answer to, and the question that comes with two people who are in a relationship, but it's not about a public relationship. The question we don't have the answer to is, did they ever talk again after that first time? And I don't think we're intended to know. Maybe that was the only conversation that Nicodemus had with Jesus. Maybe Nicodemus came to Jesus multiple times at night, but the disciples didn't always know. In my mind, I like to think that Jesus was sensitive to the understanding of who people were, and that Nicodemus didn't want everybody to know that a few weeks later he came to him at night and asked more questions. And so instead of letting the disciples know or having a conversation with his friends about, look who I'm talking with right now, this is the power of the gospel, I want you to know this is who I'm sharing life with, instead of leveraging that knowledge, perhaps Jesus always kept it quiet, allowing Nicodemus the chance to privately process the questions that he had. Nicodemus comes to Jesus the first time. Perhaps he came many times after. Because several years later, when Jesus is brought before the ruling council, and his authority to do what he's doing and to teach what he's teaching is brought into question. Nicodemus is among the ruling council. And as the ruling council begins to ask questions of Jesus, Nicodemus, it says in John 7, Nicodemus, starting in verse 50, by the way, if you're following along at home, Nicodemus, who came to Jesus by night, being one of them, said to them. Now he's answering Jesus' accusers and asking a question again. Does our law judge a man before it hears him and knows what he is doing? And they answered to him, are you one of these from Galilee too? Search and look. No prophet has ever arisen out of Galilee. What's fascinating to me is that Nicodemus was willing. He did not provide a defense for Jesus. Could he have been ashamed? Perhaps. Afraid? Perhaps. Still indecisive? Perhaps. We don't know exactly what his emotion was at that moment. But it is fascinating to read Nicodemus' response. Listen closely to his words. Does our law judge a man before it hears him and knows what he is doing? Isn't that exactly what Nicodemus was seeking to understand when he went to Jesus at night? I want to hear you and to know what you're doing. There's something about you that says to me, you have something of benefit to share, something I can learn from you. And I want to hear you and know what you're doing. And now the Sanhedrin, he is before them, Jesus is. And Nicodemus is saying to everybody else, why don't you hear him and know what he's doing? Why don't you guys go to him at night and ask him questions? Don't just stand here and lob your critiques at him. What's interesting is in this pathway of evangelism and sharing the hope that we have, along the way, it moves from being one person seeking the answers from another to two people willing to defend each other. Nicodemus was willing in this moment to at least defend Jesus' right to have his opinions and at least challenge the other ruling authority to get to know him. The whole purpose of me sharing my story is not because I'm looking for numbers to put down in a book. The purpose of me sharing my story and inviting relationships with others is because I want to see them hope like I hope, to share what I share, because it's that important to me. But something else occurred to me in this moment in Nicodemus's life, that this is the moment that Nicodemus could have just been quiet and not said anything at all. He could have just let Jesus do what he did. And this is also a moment that Jesus could have spoken to the rest of the group and validated himself by saying, look, one of your own is coming to me at night to talk to me. Shouldn't that be a reason for all of you to listen to me? But neither happened. Neither happened. Jesus didn't call him out either. That private relationship was important. And one of the challenges that I always have in what I do as a pastor and what I do in my community is that there are times that you don't know the stories that are going on behind the scenes. You don't know the emails that come into my inbox. And it's not because I don't want to share it with you. It's because I recognize that there are times when I share names and I share stories and I share people that all of a sudden we can start getting ideas about others that may not be fair to them. I would caution us in the same way, as we know the stories of others in our lives, to be careful with that knowledge, to be careful what we share, so that we don't use other people's stories as a way to show to others in our church and others in our faith that we are doing the work that God has called us to do. I answer to one authority, and it's only to God. The third time we meet Nicodemus, something wonderful has happened. We meet him at the end of John's Gospel. in John chapter 19. And starting in verse 38, Jesus has died on the cross. And now it's time for him to be buried as the Jewish custom would have. And after this, it says in John 19, Joseph of Arimathea, being a disciple of Jesus, but secretly fearing the Jews, asked Pilate that he might take away the body of Jesus, and Pilate gave him permission. And so he came and took the body of Jesus and Nicodemus, who first came to Jesus at night, and also came bringing a mixture of myrrh and aloe, about 100 pounds. That's quite a bit. That's quite a bit. About 100 pounds. And then they together took the body of Jesus and bound it in strips of linen with spices, as the custom of the Jews was to bury. And now in the place where he had been crucified, there was a garden. And in the garden, a new tomb in which no one had yet been laid. And so there they laid Jesus, because the Jews' preparation day for the tomb was nearby. There comes a moment when the seeker walks into the light and is willing to let everybody else know, I am a seeker. Now, that's not the story yet for my email correspondence, but perhaps someday it will be. Someday maybe they can share their story in our midst or in the midst of another gathering of faithful people. We are on a journey with others. For some of us, it's with our own children. For some of us, we are on a journey with coworkers. We're on a journey with students in our schools, with adults at the residential center. My encouragement for us today, first, is to respect that journey, to be a safe place for questions, and not always having to have the answers. And second, that we may be the tenacious ones in that journey, that we would walk patiently with others, that we would walk willingly with others, that we would walk at their pace, that we would walk beside them, at times walk behind them, at times walk in front of them, that we would walk and talk, and that we would not forsake even when they have to walk in silence, and that we would remain on the path even when they wander onto other paths. May I be as simple as saying, don't give up on those relationships when they aren't moving the way we want them to move, but to ask, how many years, O Lord, must I walk with them? Paul McCartney wrote, "The long and winding road that leads us to your door will never disappear. I've seen that road before, and it always leads me here. It leads me to your door." May we journey with those who God has called us to journey with patiently. Let us pray. Lord, as we go from this place and as we walk in this path, thank you for those who are walking with us. And thank you for those you have called us to walk with, our children, our students, our friends in the community, our relationships. May we be patient in this journey, and know that in every step, you walk with both of us. Amen. May we go from this place in the joy of the journey. Amen.